Today is opening day of the trial of Zahar Tsarnaev, and this is Finish Line inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. I'm David Boeri from WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
And Kevin and I are going to be here every day covering this trial from the Moakley Federal Courthouse here in Boston. This is a podcast where we'll get together to talk at the end of the day between ourselves about what we've just seen and heard and the stuff that doesn't necessarily make the newspapers or radio. So it's almost 2 years now, Kevin, since those bombings at the Boston Marathon. Three people were killed, 260 wounded, and those are the crimes, of course, that Zahar Tsarnaev is charged with carrying out along with his older brother, Tamerlan. And Tamerlan was killed in that police shootout several days after the bombings. Let's talk about what's happened in the run-up to this trial since that event. What do you think have been the key developments?
Well, I guess as we sit here today, the key development was when the Justice Department decided to make this a capital case, decided to make this a death penalty case. And every day since then, I think this is what it's been about. We have just gone through, no pun intended, a marathon jury selection, something that took 2 months that everybody thought might have taken 2 weeks. And it's precisely because of the death penalty. As much as there was a problem with people being biased because of the saturation coverage here in Boston, as much as people had a problem of being part of that 6 degrees of separation, close to people who may have been hurt by the bombing or knew somebody that was hurt by the bombing or had a friend at the finish line, one of the biggest problems throughout this jury selection was finding a jury that could, you know, sit there and agree that if they thought the evidence warranted, they would vote for the death penalty. And so everything goes back to when Eric Holder authorized the death penalty. And that's why we're sitting here quite a bit later in the year than we should have been.
Yeah, he did that in January of last year. And because it's the death penalty, it's raised the stakes on everything. And so much of that voir dire, the individual questioning of the jurors by the judge and the attorneys, has gotten to that point, and it's like the sales point at the end of the question, can you do it? Is a juror willing to apply the death penalty?
I thought what was so interesting during the jury selection is how many of the jurors actually articulated the idea that until this very moment, they had never confronted this situation. They had to do it. And so it was almost playing out in real time in front of the judge, in front of both the prosecution and the defense attorneys here. And people questioned themselves. And I think it's the shroud that hangs over this trial. David, you and I both know this is not about acquitting Zahar Tsarnaev. This is about avoiding the death penalty. And I know that that sounds terrible and we're supposed to presume innocence and that the presumption of innocence is what our idea of law and justice is built on. But I'm sorry. What we're about to go through is about whether or not this kid is put to death.
It's awfully clear that the defense wanted a plea deal to accept life in prison without a chance of parole. That's clear. The government didn't accept it, so here we are. And of course, it's interesting because we're in Massachusetts with no death penalty.
The defense's point of view from the beginning was anywhere from 60 to 70% of the jury pool was so tainted that they believed or had reason to believe that this kid was guilty. But what really didn't get brought up as much is the idea that if you just look at the polling consistently in the Eastern District of Massachusetts, well over 60% of people are opposed to the death penalty.
This is what makes it artificial. Anybody who is opposed to the death penalty is eliminated from consideration. You have to have a death penalty qualified jury. So that changes things. But of course, the statistics about the death penalty are interesting, indicating that since, 1988, 200 people have been convicted as federal defendants. Only three people who received the death penalty were actually executed.
I think the other thing is if the defense was in a position, it's not even a position of being honest, they're just not in a position to say this. But I think they were conflicted in the sense that they did believe that it was impossible for him to get a fair trial here. But they also knew in their hearts that there was no other jurisdiction in the United States where they had a better shot of seating people on the jury who would not vote to put this kid to death. I've argued all along what the lay people describe as presumption of innocence is completely different than what lawyers think of as a presumption of innocence. I think it would be very hard for this kid to get what lawyers would consider a fair trial anywhere in the United States. The idea that people in the United States didn't know about this case, about this incident, it would suggest that they had been living under a rock.
Yeah. People in San Francisco, people in Washington know about this case. However, the one thing that's not going to happen there in San Francisco or in Washington or in Alabama is you're not going to have people saying, oh, yeah, my sister-in-law was at the finish line. Oh, yeah, my brother-in-law was in the operating room. I look at Worcester, and I often wonder, wouldn't Worcester, only 40 miles away, wouldn't it have been a better place? It wouldn't have cost more, and you would have reduced a lot of the connections that people have going down the road. Even that shorter distance. You don't see Boston Strong logos in Worcester.
I was even partial to Springfield, but that's probably showing my prejudice towards hanging at Maxie's by the Connecticut River after testimony every day.
Springfield but, too. Springfield would have been outside the Boston media,
right?
Which Worcester isn't.
But the other thing about that is there would have been many more people out there who would have been in favor of the death penalty. They wouldn't have a problem with it. So if we went to Worcester or Springfield, they probably could have sat a jury in much shorter period of time. I have no doubt.
Let's talk about what is going to happen this week, what you're expecting.
My guess is that when the defense rises, they will turn and introduce their client. And if they were completely honest, they would also point to an empty chair and say, beside our client is his brother, Tamerlan. Because Tamerlan Tsarnaev is, in essence, going to be on trial in absentia. Obviously, he's dead. But it seems beyond any reasonable doubt that the defense will be pointing at Tamerlan Tsarnaev throughout this trial to suggest that, yeah, the evidence against our client really does not look good, but the bottom line is he would not be sitting in this chair if not for his older brother, somebody who was clearly radicalized, somebody who clearly had a violent bent, somebody who had been violent much of his adult life, and he was the one, he was the driving force behind this, and the bottom line is our guy is here because of his older brother. That's the only defense I see playing out.
And it's a defense of necessity, and I'm curious, I'm fascinated what the younger brother thinks of that personally. But I have to tell you, I'm almost dreading opening arguments, because you recall the case of Tariq Mahana, who was charged as a terrorist. Same judge of that case. The prosecution opened with video of the planes going into the towers in New York City. It was horrific. And I'm thinking about their open. You and I covered the Bulger case, U.S. versus James Whitey Bulger, longtime Irish godfather, who was tried in his very court 2 years ago and convicted in the summer. There were all these victims, family victims, with scars, and they were reliving it. In the case of the people in that room, they're not reliving it. They never stopped living it. The fact is, they're still in recovery. Those wounds are so raw. It's as if the flowers haven't even wilted. And I think you're going to see a prosecution open that is going to, it's going to rivet people. It's going to bring all those wounds right there to the fore. We're going to hear some graphic testimony. And if not in the openings, certainly during that trial.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I think is interesting about this case is that there are two other situations in which people were killed, which are going to haunt this case. Two other killings, and that involves the killing of three men in a suspected drug rip or drug deal or whatever you want to call it in Waltham, in which Tamerlan Tsarnaev is a suspect, a prime suspect, believed by police to be one of the killers. The other killing involves Tadashev down in Florida, who was friendly with the Tamerlan Tsarnaev, and obviously, the prosecution wants to go nowhere near these. They will argue relevance. They will argue this has nothing to do with the case. The defense will argue the relevance of Tamerlan being involved in these cases because it actually goes to the defense argument that he was so prone to violence, so engaged in over-the-top violence, including murderous violence, and that allows the defense to show this is somebody that long before they put the bombs on Boylston Street was engaged in murderous violence that did not involve his little brother.
I went to Florida after Tadashev was shot and killed. The facts of that didn't emerge for a year later, and they're still hazy. But here was Tadashev, perhaps the only witness to Tamerlan Tsarnaev's involvement in a triple homicide that occurred 18 months before the marathon. Here was evidence, if true, that he was involved in violent crimes 18 months before the marathon. That's explosive stuff. But that is not going to be in the purview of this trial.
I agree.
You and I, and I think most people, come to trials, and they want the trials to open up the story and to solve the case and to give us facts about the crimes that occurred. Here you have the prosecution, which in the style and the reality of prosecutions is about getting the conviction, not complicating its task by being an inquest or serving as an inquest for a finder of facts. So, for instance, whatever happened in Waltham involving the brother, highly unlikely that that's going to come out unless the judge allows the defense, over the objections of the prosecution, to do that.
The other thing that's similar to Bulger here is the issue involving the FBI. And one avenue the defense would want to explore is, what did the FBI know specifically about Tamerlan Tsarnaev, and by extension, his younger brother, when the Russian authorities supposedly tipped off the Americans about this guy, Tamerlan? Now, to this day, that's very vague about what we know about really what happened. And also, it raises the specter. Could this have been prevented? Had the FBI either pursued Tamerlan Tsarnaev more aggressively and or tipped off the local authorities, in this case it would have been Cambridge PD, to keep an eye on these guys? And that's something, obviously, if I was his defense attorney, I'd be all over that. There's going to be countless FBI agents up there testifying. When I get one up there, my cross-examination is honing right in on that. What did you guys know about these people, and why didn't you do more about it?
From the prosecution, objection, Your Honor.
Right.
So, Kevin, we're going to have a lot more to talk about later today after opening arguments in this trial, and we'll be back here to do that. It strikes me that the only difference between what we're doing now and what we do every day is that we'd probably be having a drink after this, talking the same stuff that we're talking here in the WBUR office in the federal courthouse.
That and the fact that all my language is FCC approved.
David Boyer here from WBUR.
I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
We'll talk to you soon.
Finish Line, Inside the Boston Marathon Bombing Trial, is a co-production of WBUR and the Boston Globe. New episodes of the podcast will be released multiple times a week throughout the trial after court lets out for the day. You can listen at WBUR.org and at BostonGlobe.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where new episodes will appear as soon as they're released. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and search Finish Line to subscribe. Thanks for listening.